this up. 3, 2, 1. Fired up, footballers! James here with Jiggly and Men in Red with some fire ratings analysis, maybe a little bit of debate. What's going on, guys? Happy New Year! Almost.
Yeah, well, Happy New Year to you too, James.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here struggling. Sad Boys FC, please listen to our backlog. We won't be starting until the new year. We were planning on recording an episode the other day, but we couldn't get all three of us together. So,
well, let's get that going again. I follow along. It's always good to hear you guys talk anime.
Hearing Adnan be very confused with everything that me and RJ talk about. That's
always a blast. Well, we will break right into it. We got the Chicago 2020 ratings. Link in the description from the ChicagoSportsNation.com article written by Lee Guadagno. Apologies if I did not say that right, but it looks right. Lee Guadagno. He will start off with the goalkeeper here, guys. Bobby Shuttleworth, he rated at a 7 out of 10, saying, he became the number one goalkeeper kind of in the middle of the season, early on, actually, with Kenneth Cronholm's season-ending injury. And he definitely proved himself to be competent. I will say, to me, not necessarily, he was definitely good, but to me, he was a backup goalkeeper. That's like a 6. What do you guys think there?
Jiggly, you want to tackle this one first, bro?
I feel like whenever I give these sort of, whenever I give ratings, it feels inflated, but trust me, it's mostly because I see it as like grading like a teacher where it's like 7 is a C, so it's like average. So I'm completely fine with him getting a 7. I think that it's average. He wasn't trash. He wasn't like amazing. We still need to get a new goalkeeper, but he wasn't bad. So he was fine. He passed.
Yeah, 7's obviously real close to what I think. I'm gonna drop it 0.5 to 6.5, just because he had a few minor blunders, which, granted, most goalkeepers are going to have in a season. But other than that, he's obviously very serviceable. I think everyone here can agree that he's not the long-term goalkeeper for this club. But he did what he needed to do. He made some fantastic shot blocks. And I'm happy that he got the opportunity to be the starting goalkeeper too. And he'll probably compete next year for it as well.
That's a good point. I mean, happy that he got an opportunity. As a backup, that's all you're looking for is that one shot, that one opportunity, that Eminem song. But by the way, everybody, if you could take a moment and consider subscribing to Spitting Fire YT, we'd greatly appreciate it, helping to fan the flames of Chicago Fire soccer throughout the Chicago Fire, throughout the Chicago area, and the nation, beyond, whatever, if you guys want to go that far. But we greatly appreciate it. Smash that like button for Jiggly and Men in Red joining us today, or dislike button. Let us know how you feel. You don't have to hide it. Comment below as always. We got live chat going. If you feel the need to interject, go ahead and do so. We always love to hear from you guys. The next was Kenneth Cronholm, guys, with a 5. To me, Kenneth Cronholm, that's a 2, but maybe I'm grading too hard.
Yeah, I don't think you could give Cronholm really a rating at all, just because he was injured most of the time. But
you can give him a rating.
Yeah, it wasn't good. If you had to give him a rating, it wasn't good. It's definitely, for me, probably a 3. He's pretty trash. He doesn't move. He's like a brick. A brick wall, excuse me. But a bad brick wall, one that you could circumvene very easily. So
I think just saying a single brick was good.
A single brick, yeah. A single brick in a very, very big wall, yeah. Wait, that made no sense. Never mind. Ignore me.
He's just a single brick. He's not a brick wall. It's just a single brick that doesn't move.
A cone?
Yeah, not great.
I think, yeah, like, drop him down somewhere, like maybe a 4 or 3. The big thing with me when I was watching this season was just watching him play. And then also on the side, I was covering the NWSL Challenge Cup. And I'm seeing like third string goalkeepers in the NWSL playing better than Kronholm.
That's what, yes.
Is it, and somebody, and I remember I got into an argument with Tyrus on Twitter about like, oh, having to stop harder shots. But the thing is, just look at the positioning in itself. A third string goalkeeper for Portland had so much better positioning than Kronholm did. Kronholm came all the way out for no reason a lot of times. And he never had his body set in the right way. And that's what lost a lot of games for us in the, I forgot the name, MLS's back tournament. I can only remember the Challenge Cup, and I keep calling the MLS tournament Challenge Cup. But that's what lost a lot of those games for us, is just he came out way too far. He was doing stupid things. And I think there's only like a couple of goals were scored against the Fire where Kronholm was in goal that weren't his fault. Only like one or two.
Absolutely. The real issue with him was that positioning. I mean, in terms of his foot skills outside of that, distribution-wise, passing-wise, he's not a bad goalkeeper. But at this point in time, you can't afford to have a goalkeeper who doesn't move and who's always out of position as your starting goalkeeper. So that's why I think the starting for the 2021 season, if there is one at this point, honestly, is going to be really interesting to watch for this club.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been talking about that. If there is going to be a 2021 season with MLS declaring its intent to invoke the force majeure clause, take a look at a couple of our past videos for that. Boris Sekulic at right back. He gets a 6. Now, to me, Boris was another big disappointment. And I feel like the grade's got to feel that disappointment. Kenneth Kronholm definitely felt it with me giving him a 2. I mean, like, I think it's over for Kenneth. For Boris Sekulic, I don't know if it's over. Maybe he deserves another shot to kind of acclimate. Maybe he had acclimation problems. I'll put him at a 5.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I actually have very specific feelings about Mr. Sekulic. I think he's a decent right back. I don't think he's a modern day right back. As we've seen, granted, he did have 2 goals and 2 assists. He's not that good going forward, especially the crossing, which in modern day soccer or football, whatever you want to call it, it's pretty much essential for your fullbacks to be able to cross. Service into the box is one of the primary needs in a modern day fullback. On that front, I don't think he's good at all. When it comes to defending, one-on-one, he's really not that bad. He's a relatively larger guy and decent in the air, because he did have a header goal this year, which was cool to see. But also, I think something interesting about him is that he can be a center back. So if you need him to come off the bench, that's another, spot in the CB depth you have on a team that, honestly, if you think about it, is slowly gaining a lot of center back depth, which is really good to see. So I'll give him a 5 because he's very average, but I think he provides something to the team on defense for sure.
I don't have as many negative feelings about him as you guys seem to have. He didn't seem like that interesting of a defender, but moving forward, I thought he did well. I mean, I didn't really notice many of his crosses. The thing is that he didn't really play as a right back. He played as a center back. So it was... He scored 2 goals and he got 2 assists. He was in the attack more than more than Berich was a lot of time. He was in the attack more often than Nikolic was in the attack last year.
These are some good points you're putting in, Jiggly. Yeah.
I don't really have too much of an opinion about him as a defender, but he did show something in the attack. And I think I am going to stick with what they had with as a 6. It wasn't good enough to be like, I'm fine with you. You don't really have too much I can think of with working on something, but there is something off with him, and I think he can get better. And I liked his attacking play, and that's really not exactly a compliment for a defender, but I can say.
Yeah, no, like I said, 2 goals, 2 assists for a right back. That's actually pretty good, especially when he's entering a new league. Completely unfamiliar with it, and a really odd season, but there's definitely ways that he could, prove to be more serviceable on the attack. You're starting with, swinging the ball in from the wing. But he's not even guaranteed to start anymore. So I think
with John Espinoza, coming in.
Exactly. With as a bench piece, I think it's a very quality, or it's a very solid addition to the bench. You could have a guy who could come in and play center back, guy who could come in and play right back, maybe even left back. I'm not really sure. But I think he serves a better purpose coming off the bench as opposed to starting at this
point. Yeah, he might be a depth piece. I like that idea of him as a depth piece, as a depth CB or a depth right back. The article says,
I think that it depends on what formation we use. If we keep trying to use a three back or a five back where they're wing backs instead of just full backs, I think that he's not going to be playing very much. But if we do just go with straight fullbacks, I think he is going to be a starter at the right back position.
I think that if we go three center backs, he's more likely to be used, actually. I feel a little bit the opposite there. But that's just me. Let us know what you guys think in the comments below. And we got a live chat checking in, too, with Nate and Margaret saying, yo, and support Wagnerissimo. So hello, Margaret. Hello, Nate. What's going on in the live chat? Everybody else there, thanks for checking in with us. Let us know how you guys feel. If you guys want to chime in while we're grading these guys, I'll read you guys' chats off, as always. Or if you're listening to after the fact, just put your comments below. Smash that like button. Subscribe for more Spitting Fire. Hopefully you could join us on our journey up to 300 subscribers. We're getting there. But two more things I want to say on Sekulic. The article says, if the Fire have aspirations to eventually be an MLS Cup contender, they'll need better than Boris. Yay or nay?
That's interesting. I think you can do better, but I also know that right back is usually not a position that is incredibly popular to have super high level profile players in. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at it like classic MLS, Boris is average, and honestly, he's probably suitable if you beef up, you know, other positions with higher quality players.
And if John Espinoza could push him even, yeah, right?
Yeah, and we don't know if Espinoza is going to be any good or not. Obviously, he appears to be a slightly pacier player going forward, but he may be garbage. He may be great for all we know. And if you need to shove Boris in there on a team that's going to contend for MLS Cup, I don't think you're that bad, or that bad off, I should say. But you could definitely do better.
Go ahead, Jake.
I think that it just all depends on what on what Vicky wants to do. And the thing is that I still don't know what he wants to do.
Right.
It's not like Pauno where it's like, oh, there is no system. It's more just like, I don't think Vicky's had the opportunity to fully like have his team out there, implement his system and like build his system yet. So we just don't know anything yet. And it's really frustrating. It was really frustrating for me throughout the entire season trying to talk about the team, because it was just, the team seemed to play exactly the same every single game, but we got different results. And I didn't understand that. And I looked into it more, and it's just, it doesn't seem to be like any sort of system going on. So the big thing about whether or not Boris is going to mean anything to this team is if we're going to play a system that will utilize what Boris does well.
Mm-hmm. He's tall too, I think.
Yeah, exactly. He's pretty tall for a wingback or a right back. So you could definitely shift him around.
And good point with his two goals, two assists. I mean, he's definitely had some statistical output. Last thing I wanted to say about Boris is that they left him unprotected for the development draft for the new team. So yeah, I thought that was interesting.
That was really interesting to me, actually.
We only have enough. I think
that shows that he's, you know, Wiki and Heights, whoever makes those decisions, is, you know, going to potentially use him as a depth piece as opposed to a regular day starter.
Yeah, they're not depending on him, right? Content, please checking in here saying he could, Boris Sekulic could never defend the back posts on a cross, despite that height. Whenever a cross came in, the attacker always got there before he did, and it cost us a couple of goals, in my opinion. Thanks for checking in here, Content, please. Yeah, he did. The Fire definitely had issues on a lot of corners. They had a lot of corners too, but defending corners, they definitely had trouble, it seemed.
I think that's a really interesting point, because what I found watching MLS over the years is that's like people don't mark in the box off set pieces and corners really well. So unfortunately, I think that's a really standard practice in the league, that it's just everyone does a really bad job of marking in the box. So if Boris was able to develop the tendency to do that better, he would automatically go up as an above average, you know, player in his position. That's the way I see it.
That's just MLS thing.
Yep. Classic MLS. We love
Classic MLS.
Ooh, now a very, to me, this player is probably one of the one of the hardest players, I think, to kind of grade statistically in MLS. This guy is one of the leading interceptions all of MLS, and we're talking, of course, about Francisco Calvo, the captain of the Chicago Fire. Jiggly just wrote an awesome article talking about the captain, the need for the Chicago Fire to replace him as a captain. You know, he did his job, he did his duty, but the Fire need a real captain. I agree, Calvo's not that guy in my opinion. At least doesn't seem like that guy to me, an outsider. I'm not in the locker room. But the other thing is, Calvo just doesn't, he doesn't seem to have a lot of the traits that I think you need in a captain. Now let's move out of his captain spot. He did his duty. He did great. He did his job. He did what he needed to do to help the team, I think, when they needed to rely on him. And that shows something. That shows a positive trait for Francisco Calvo. He didn't quit on his team. Number two about Calvo, let's break into his gameplay. To me, he doesn't impress me as an MLS as the Fire center back. He's an undersized center back. He loafs a lot. There's a lot of defensive inconsistencies to him. However, despite his defensive inconsistencies, there's offensive flair to him. On corner pieces, on set pieces, there's maybe no more dangerous Fire player than Francisco Calvo. And that's to be saying something, to be, you know, with CJ Sapong out there, Barich out there, Pineda out there, and Francisco Calvo might be the most dangerous person on them with those set pieces. He has a lot of that fire and that flair. So, but once again, goes back to the idea, he's a center back. Also, he can pass. He's got decent passing skills, I think. But also, his communication is sometimes questionable, and his defensive pressure is sometimes too lax for me. And that's my issues with Calvo. So it's kind of a mixed bag. By the way, FIFA rates him as a top 20, a top 15, 20, or top 20 center back in MLS. I don't know how the chat feels about that or how you guys feel about that. Let us know.
Go ahead, Jiggly. This one's yours first. I got to collect my thoughts on this
one. Oh, it's a lot.
The thing with him is, okay, I have my article out about, you know, the fact that the Fire need a better captain. And the reason why I was talking about, why I originally started like talking about it, I think I kept mentioning it on Twitter. I kept mentioning it on Sad Boys, that you look at the way he plays and he just seems like he's just a loud personality, not exactly a leader, just a loud personality. So it's, I don't know. I'm going to take out the idea of him being captain from this rating, because that's like a completely separate issue. That's an issue based around the club. And I explained it in that article that it's mostly about the club kind of shooting itself in the foot, that we don't have enough good candidates to be captain.
I'll put the link in the description, by the way.
But in terms of his actual play, he's like the most up and down player I think I can think of in any sport. In terms, I'm trying to think of like a comparison, because I always have to compare this to the people who I talk to who don't.
It's like Russell Westbrook in the NBA.
Not even that.
Really highly, other people think he's garbage.
Not even that. It's more just like extremely good. Like thinking in football, like an extremely good on one drive and then fumbles on the next. You know, it's just so inconsistent, but he's consistently inconsistent. It's I think that five is a little bit too harsh. I think that maybe either a six. I would give him a six or a seven, because when he saves us, he saves us big time. But when he fails, it's pretty much all on him.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything Jiggly just said there. Disregarding, you know, the whole captain thing and talking about solely his play on the field, he's by far and away the most polarizing guy in the roster. He's either, you know, really good or really bad. There's not much just average play from Calvo. And I think that, you know, the five is definitely too harsh. Like, when he's playing well, you know, he does have decent offensive flair off set pieces. He can dribble really well. His passing is good when it wants to be. His 1v1 defending is pretty good, too. Yes, he's undersized, but for a center back, like, he has decent athleticism, and I think that's something to note. But, you know, on the contrary, when he's bad, he's bad. Like his communication with Pineda and JB or Navarro on the left, sometimes, wasn't the best, even with Gaston and Alvaro in the middle. His passing also was either like was sometimes really, really bad, and he passed it right to the number 10 on the other team or the winger on the other team. Same with his dribbling and overall just his patience was really bad. And I'd give him a 6.5 because of that, because I like Kelvo. He's not captain quality. Like Jiggly said, he's just the most outgoing guy in the team. And that's something they're gonna have to address definitely this offseason. But I think he can continuously be, a top 15 center back in the league if he just manages to stay consistent. That's what it comes down to.
Here's from a quote from the article. Given his vulnerability to error, I hear myself repeating, guys. The Fire will need a better center back and a better captain if they are to improve next season.
May I suggest Maya Yoshida? I need to give a shout out because I wasn't able to specifically say the shout out in the article that I wrote. But my idea for Maya Yoshida coming to the Fire comes from RJ. So
Who is
this
this?
that's for RJ. Maya Yoshida
Southampton,
is
right?
what?
Former Southampton center back?
Yes, former
Okay.
Southampton center back and former Southampton captain, current Japanese national team captain, speaks like a ton of languages, and he's real tall. And I just think that it fits our needs, would work out.
What's his
I
name?
think
How do you
that
spell it?
Maya Yoshida,
Maya.
I'm gonna type it into our chat here so you can see it real quick.
I think I got him. Maya Yoshida, footballer, Serie A Sampdoria. Gotcha. Here he is on the screen if you guys want to see. This is Maya Yoshida.
He's currently on Sampdoria. I think that it's
Two words, James. I'm what? Yeah.
rated 73 overall by FIFA. What's
Sounds
those
about right.
two words?
No, that's good. That's him.
Okay, gotcha, guys.
Yeah, that's him. I'm
Margaret's
watching the screen too.
going back to Calvo for just a second here. Margaret's saying that overall never impressed me that much, in my honest opinion. Nate saying he has flashes of an 8 out of 10, but showed a 4 out of 10 just the majority of the season. I kind of agree with that. It's closer to that. There was days where, and Jiggly was saying this too, right? You were saying up and down. A couple
Yeah.
days where he's like 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10. Oh my God, where is that?
Even
And
within the same that within the same game.
But then
It's
even in the same game,
up and
yes,
down.
but
I
for
also
majority of the season, 4, 5 out of 10-ish.
feel like because he was captain, people had an inflated idea of what he could possibly be. Because when you think of, the captain on your team, everyone's like not necessarily the best player on your team, but someone who's consistently good, hardworking. And as a result, they associated those traits with Kelvo when, being one of the more inconsistent people and honestly the whole league, that was never an adequate way of looking at it. So that's another reason, he was under a lot of pressure this season was as the captain, you need to consistently perform, which obviously we all know he's not the best at doing. So take the captaincy tag off him, give him another season, in my opinion, and see what happens.
I really like the idea that somebody proposed. I think that there are like some trade rumors going around about Kendall Waston coming to the Fire, and Francisco Calvo and Kendall Waston. That just seems like a wonderful team chaos center back
Oh,
pairing for me.
absolutely.
I would love to watch that. That had to have happened, right? Did that happen? No.
No, I don't think so.
But I would have loved for it to have happened at some point, and I want that solely
Yeah,
just to see
Kendall
what
Waston
happens.
is probably the second most, not bipolar, excuse me, a polarizing, center back in the league. He's gets one red card one day and then gets a goal and five interceptions the next day. So, yeah. That would be a mess, but it would be funny,
A
that's for
beautiful
sure.
mess.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. I also think, Carlos Turan's going to slot in at some point
Yep, I'm
and
excited for him.
provide that height, provide the height that they were lacking from Kelvo. Whether that means they're going to move, I don't know, Panetta into the midfield or start Turan over Kelvo and force Kelvo to go back to left back, who knows? But, Turan and even Wyatt Ahmsburg, who was honestly, he was pretty good when he played. Like, he wasn't bad. Provides more heights. So
Ahmsburg
the
isn't
heights on
even
the
on this
bench.
list, I don't think.
He is. He's at the
No,
bottom.
Oh, he is. He's way at the bottom.
But Nate was saying red cards for days with that Watson Calvo
Oh,
combo.
yeah.
Red
Like I
cards for
said,
days.
like Jiggly said,
It'd be
controlled, not
beautiful.
controlled chaos, uncontrolled
It's
chaos.
just chaos. It's beautiful.
It's absolute chaos.
Content, please, saying that I think that they gave Calvo captaincy just because he was one of the longer standing players, but I think Gaston would have been better.
My dad had a theory. We were talking about this. The whole reason why I ended up writing the article was because I had like a long conversation with my dad about captain stuff, about the Fire. And his theory is that they got Gaston planning for him to be captain. I think he was captain at Velez. And they thought that he would work out, but he got there and they just realized maybe he's not the right guy. So they just let Calvo stay as captain. They gave it to Calvo still. So it may have been Gaston who was supposed to be captain, but he didn't really take the role. He didn't grab the role and they just ended up passing it off to Calvo, who was already captain.
That's really interesting to me because Gaston never screamed captain to me.
Captain at Velez.
That's interesting. In my opinion, this might be a hot take. This season, Bobby Shuttleworth should have been the captain.
Wow.
And
I would also agree.
Whoa, no, yeah, you might not be wrong there.
So emotionally into the game, he's a leader, he's quality communication for the most part.
Bobby. Bornstein.
Yeah, but JB didn't start consistently enough to be captain.
Well, I mean, Bobby wasn't going to be starting until Kronholm got injured.
That's true. That is true.
Not sure what you guys think of the chat who should be captain, but let us know.
I'm a big fan of putting goalkeepers as captain because they're the communication leaders of the team. So as a goalkeeper growing up, granted, I wasn't captain. I thought I should have been, but I wasn't. Mm-hmm. It's always a good idea to make the goalkeeper captain.
It looks like a faux pas sometimes to people, but I agree with you that like they're heart and soul team sometimes.
The legacy positions for captain are either goalkeeper, back, or holding midfielder, and then those are like the three main positions for a captain.
Yep, I agree.
By the way, guys, I just wanted to thank you both and live chat and everybody for joining us today. It's awesome talking soccer with you guys.
Always, James. Always a pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Not live or after the fact. Content Police saying, I think giving Madron a chance wouldn't be terrible. We'll get to Madron here. Mauricio Pineda. We have high hopes for this kid. Three goals, two assists. Homegrown. The lone homegrown left basically after George. I mean, there's a few other homegrowns, but the one that's starting anyway, and with George Mihailovic being traded over to Montreal. Recognized the club's defensive player of the year and leader in minutes played. Although he was a rookie, Pineda's composure on both sides of the ball this season made it look like he has been in the league for years. He looked like a rookie early on, but as the season went on, he definitely looked less and less and less like a rookie.
We've been waiting for Pineda to sign for the Fire for years. I mean, literal years. I remember being in high school talking to a friend who like knew a friend in the academy who knew Pineda, and I was talking to him about like what's Pineda gonna do. And instead they signed Georgie. And I remember something about like Pineda was waiting for a Generation Adidas contract. He didn't want to go to the Fire for a while. And then finally he graduates and he signs with the Fire and he puts on this performance. And I think that he was great. Obviously, yeah, he's a rookie. He needs to ease himself into the team. He needs to ease himself into the level of play. Obviously, North Carolina is good, but like when you're playing for really good program like North Carolina in college soccer, you're not gonna really get as much of a challenge as you are gonna be playing on a team like the Fire in MLS. So I think that Pineda did really well. And what was that? Was an 8? Did he give him? He gave him an 8. And I think that I would also agree with that, either an 8 or a 9. I think he was the best player on the pitch for the Fire out of everybody. He was the best player. The question that's going to be going forward is whether he's going to be a center back or a holding midfielder. I remember back when he was in the academy and he was playing at striker or something like that. So I don't know, but I do know that I would want to have him on the pitch. And we'll see where he ends up with the way that the team is shaping.
Yeah, this article gives him an 8. I think that's a little high. I think it's very generous. That's like, they're like, oh, this kid's going to be great. Let's give him an 8. He definitely produced. He was great. He was very, very good on a bad team. To me, that's like a 7. I don't know. I just feel like 8's a little generous.
I think that just comes with a difference of like what we think a 7 or an 8 is. Yeah, average. 8 is like a little bit above average.
You cutting hairs, right? Yeah, and he's as far as like a prospect and to build around, he's a player to build around. According to the article, extremely calm on the ball, sees the game very well, can make a good pass, makes plenty of defensive interventions. I also recall him having a pretty great long shot.
Yeah, he's got a pretty nasty shot, and that's something you don't see often from center back. I would personally have to agree with the rating of 8. I think it's, you know, a perfect rating for him. This is the type of guy that the Fire aren't good at securing homegrowns for an extended period of time. CC, Harry Ship and Georgie, they like to offload homegrowns. This is a guy you could build around in that back line or at the 6, wherever you want him. He's definitely the bright spot, you know, in the back line, the best defensive player we have. Obviously, the club acknowledged that. And I also think it, you know, at the national landscape for Mauricio Pineda is also increasing because he got a call up to December camp, you know, with the MLS True. Only roster for the U.S. soccer, which we are obviously it wasn't 100% guaranteed, but very happy to see him and Georgia get called up. So I think that's good for his stock. I think people are going to start taking note of him. And if he continues to play, you know, somewhat consistent, Europe might be in his future, which if you want to be successful, you got to take the New York Red Bulls or Union or FC Dallas route of starting to send your homegrowns, you know, keep them around for 2 to 3 years, however long, and ship them off to Europe and get that transfer fee money in. And Pineda could be the beginning of that. And obviously, that's something Heights wants to do because he signed, what, like 8 homegrown players?
And you think first, it's time like, to start talking months. About homegrown players right now? Just well, in
we
general?
Got, we got them on the list. We got a whole bunch.
Well, I'm just saying in general, like the way that we're using them, because I do have a lot of opinions about Georgie. Is Georgie on the list so I can talk about him?
Yeah,
Georgie's on the list. I'll talk about that when we get there.
Yeah.
I'll save it for that.
But hey, write it down. Make sure you got it in the can.
Oh no, the moment that that Georgie is mentioned, I'm gonna talk about it.
Margaret saying that Pineda was her favorite, 8.5. Contemplating saying, I think a center back. I think he's a center back and find him a good partner. I was actually just wondering about that. I mean, this guy, it's not a bad problem to have, but this guy's, he's a CB or a CDM. You could play him in kind of both positions. You definitely want Wiki to figure out where he thinks he's best suited for him in Wiki's system. But that's not a bad thing that this guy can go play two positions like a CB and a CDM.
I think that the only way that I think that going forward with the amount of depth that we have at center back, the only way I'd want him playing at center back is if we have someone that he can learn from next to him. I think that Austin Berry was only good because he had Arne Friedrich next to him. And, you know, even when you have a player who has a lot of talent, I'm going to use the Red Stars as an example, but Tina Davidson did not look good playing defense for the Red Stars until she was playing next to Julie Ertz.
Yeah.
So you need to have a guiding presence, and I don't think the Fire have that guiding presence.
That's a good point.
That's going to make Pineda a better center back.
Yeah, Matt Beasler.
Matt Beasler is a wonderful idea.
I think he signed for Austin, at least I heard, but maybe it's not true.
Oh, he did?
I read that, but then I saw it disputed elsewhere. I like read that like he's in talks with them, but Beasler would be awesome. Like, and you're right, Jig. I think that's a great point. Like, you know, just to learn from somebody, and he's got Taran, who's a young guy. That's another young guy you're kind of depending on too. And how could Taran and Pineda really learn from each other? They need that older presence. And Calvo, I don't know if he's it. He definitely hasn't proved to be it.
He's too inconsistent to be that person. As I said, Arne Friedrich was that person for Austin Berry. Julie Ertz is that person for Tyrone Davidson. I don't know. I don't think Calvo is comparable to Julie Ertz or Arne Friedrich. Mm-hmm. So it's, I would try to find a way to put him at holding midfielder. But the problem is that then you got Gaston, you got Medran, you got a few other options there.
Absolutely, yeah. The Fire have a decent midfield. We'll move on to JB. Jonathan Bornstein getting up there in the age. He's 36 years old. 1 goal, 1 assist. His production's down, in my opinion. And you could start to see age catch up with him. It says he played 13 games in a season. Next season, if it's going to be similar, you know, 23 to 25 games that we could reasonably expect. Maybe not a full 34-game docket. Maybe 10 games is kind of what we expect out of JB. And, you know, just somebody there who's great to practice with, a great veteran presence, someone to help keep the locker room settled. I think that's kind of going to be his role.
I would agree. I think I love JB, locker room presence. You know, he's obviously one of the hardcore leaders on the team, especially for the really young American homegrowns and all those guys. I think a 7's too generous.
Yeah, 7, by the way, is his rating.
And I would give him a 6. And, you know, the old wear and tear is starting to show on a guy like JB. In 2019, he was very productive for the Flyer in terms of his work ethic and defensive ability. In 2020, I personally saw deterioration on that front. Now, whether that's just due to him getting older or whatever, I'm not sure. But he's definitely more beneficial to the team off the field than on the field at this point.
And yes.
I'm a big Miguel Navarro stan. I love Miguel Navarro. I love his raw talent. Obviously, we'll get into him, mm-hmm. I'm assuming. But
yep.
I would like to see Navarro start over JB. That may be considered a hot take. I look forward to hearing your opinions on it, but that's my thought process.
I would prefer Miguel Navarro was good enough to start over Jonathan Bornstein.
Easily.
I don't know if he is, but I would prefer him to be that person. Mm-hmm. I also really like Bornstein's veteran presence. I feel like he's done a lot more than I expected him to do when he first came in. He played a lot better than I expected him to last year, and he's played, you know, about the same, in my opinion, this year. I would give him, that's a 7, right? Yeah, a 7 or a 6. It's just, he did more than I expected, but I was expecting like so little that it's kind of hard for me to form a good opinion there. He's old. I felt like he should have been the captain in terms of just like, you know, the general person, like standing up in front of the mics and talking to press and all that.
Yeah, that would have been better.
But we didn't really have that. And that was another point that I made about like not feeling like Calvo's a captain, because we didn't really have anybody on this team who was like the face of the team talking to press.
I agree with this. Bornstein is the best fullback on this Fire roster. At least he was last season. He was much better than Navarro. Bornstein was way more consistent, even though you did see the deterioration, than Navarro. Navarro had his flashes, but the consistency wasn't there nearly as much. Jonathan Bornstein going backward, very reliable. Going forward, very reliable. He's losing that flair. He lost a lot of that pace and that speed, but he never was really known for that. But it's a lot of his calmness and his composure that I thought that brings him, that made him the best fullback on the Fire roster. And I absolutely think he was the best. I think I'd put him at a 6. Miguel Navarro, I'd drop down, I maybe a 5, which is what he's rated at here. But what do you guys think? Bornstein, best fullback on the Fire?
I mean, if you're looking for consistently average left back,
then most consistent.
If you want to take a risk, go with Navarro. It just depends on, you know, what Wiki values more. I guess, because they're both just very different. Miguel has obviously the potential to be better, but Bornstein is just all around the more consistent guy as of now. We'll see if that changes as Bornstein gets older and same with Navarro.
Right. And he's going to be 37 here. Content Police saying, big fan of Navarro, but he gets angry very easily and does some questionable tackles at times. But
that's
the
fun part.
But he's young, so with more playing time, with more playing time, he'll definitely be great for us. Navarro in the article is labeled a 5. At only 21, Navarro has a long way to go before coming the fullback this team needs him to be. Hopefully next year, this coming season, is going to be, he ascends to that. He is prone.
Who do you think this guy is? Aang? Like, it's, yeah, he's, like, he's got a long way before he saves anybody. It's just, you need somebody who's going to be consistent. And at some point, he's going to have to be consistent. But we're already starting a massively inconsistent player at center back. So we know that it's okay. And if you have somebody like Bornstein behind him who is consistently average, who will be there as the stopgap, I think that it's fine. And the way that he played, yes, he did not play that well. And when he made his mistakes, he made some real big mistakes. But I think he was fine. I'd give him like a 6. Is fine.
Yeah, I would agree. A 6. And like I said, not even 5 minutes ago, huge Miguel Navarro guy. And he's so much raw talent. You could see it. He's got speed, decent dribbling. His crossing at times was really good. Once again, his crossing sometimes was really bad. And I think you got to be a little lax with him because he's a 21-year-old coming from what? Where did he come from? The Venezuelan league? To MLS, which is a higher caliber league, but also a lot more physical league and a very foreign country, and everything was
everything COVID that happened.
Everything that happened. So, you know, when he got on the field, yes, he showed flashes of really good potential. He also showed that he's a 21-year-old fullback who's new to the league.
It says Wiki and may have overused him. And he played 10 games.
Possible.
See, I don't think I don't think I disagree. I don't think I agree with that. I think he was used properly. You know, eventually you got to stop giving big minutes to 36-year-old.
Yeah, right. So, that's a good point.
Granted, I mean, you did have Andre Reynolds as well, so
that's why I would say, that's the only place that I would say yes, absolutely. That's why we'll get to Dre when we get to Dre. He's got to be on this.
I know you're a big Dre fan, Wiggly.
But it's just like, yeah, the only way that I would say Navarro was overused is if you bring Dre into the equation. And that's a big letdown. We'll get there.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Gaston Jimenez getting a 7.5, 17 games started, 0 goals, 3 assists. The first year DP played an important role in the way the Fire played this season. Now, Gaston Jimenez certainly was important to the Fire, but to me, he's just a guy. He's just a guy that's very good at soccer. He just happens to be one of the better guys at soccer on the Chicago Fire team. I don't know if this guy's a DP quality type of player, in my opinion. He's definitely a TAM, GAM level player. He deserves to be in the MLS. He's a good center defensive mid. But DP, you got to be... He's getting international minutes, though, isn't he?
He got a couple call-ups to the Argentinian senior team.
No, he went to Paraguay.
But and just I'm not seeing enough out of this guy to, like, you know, think he's not going to Europe.
I really value DP number sixes, and I like Dax. Obviously, we had Dax before, but I really value high level sixes. I also think their production's not going to be as high as, you know, box to box midfielders or tens, for obvious reasons. They're closer to the defense than they are the opponent goal. So I think that should be taken into consideration. I mean, what I saw from Gaston was, it obviously took him a few games to get really into the swing of things with the Fire. Very calm on the ball, which I think is really good at times and really bad at times. It's really good when you need to keep the ball, but it's really bad because there were some times that he gave the ball up in midfield because he held onto it for too long. Good passing going forward, really good long, you know, distribution to the other side, and a sweet long shot. I don't think he was, obviously he had 0 goals, but there were a couple times where he was taking that ball, like,
true,
outside the 18. And he was swinging it in. He got close a couple times. I like him. I need to see his production go up a little bit more so I could comfortably say he's a DP level, but I see where, you know, Heights was going when he decided to bring Gaston in from Velas.
He combines well with Alvaro Medrón. I do agree with that assessment. From attacking perspective, the team's level certainly dropped when he was missing. Excellent vision, calm on the ball, engine in the midfield. I mean, he runs, but his pace is not that great. As far as a six, you know, there's many types of sixes, right? There's the Matic, the big, tall, not very fast type, but, you know, very skilled, very technical, also great at tackling, very good positioning. And then you got the Conte types, which are way smaller, but just physically, physical specimens, still speedy, fast, very accelerating, got great acceleration. And Gaston Jimenez doesn't strike me as either of those. He strikes me as a guy who can pass. He doesn't strike me as like a true modern six. He's just a guy that could pass the ball and can be very technical with it. And to me, that's a harder guy to fit into my lineup if he doesn't truly do the job of a six. McCarty's a much better defender.
I was about to say, I think that Gaston is just Dax who can't defend as well.
Not nearly as well. Not even in the same echelon. And Dax is not a player that has pace. Dax has explosiveness, has some explosiveness and small bits of acceleration, but not a pace guy, but he didn't have to be. He was able to make up for a lot in positioning and reading the game. Gaston reads the game fantastic. Offensively and defensively, he reads it quite well. He definitely makes pretty good defensive stops. He's not bad, but he's just he's harder to fit into your roster than Dax is, in my opinion, because then it changes what you need your other midfielders to do. All of a sudden, I need a more defensive midfielder to drop back with this guy because he's not as defensive as we want him to be.
Well, then that goes back to tactics.
I disagree with you guys on this one. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. And here's why. You know, Dax is a bulldog. He is your classic number six.
Yes, a bit more.
High work ethic. Not incredibly great going forward, but when he gets the ball, he's hustling up the field. Mm-hmm. And Gaston's a completely different type of guy. But I also think, you know, the fact that he's a little slow, not slower paced, but it's not necessarily his defensive work ethic. I think he has significantly better vision on the offensive and defensive side. Interception-wise, he can stick his foot out and get the ball. Mm-hmm. He doesn't hustle back on D as much as, you know, a guy like Dax would. But I think he's just a different type of six. And I think you're bringing a guy like Medrano in to complement the type of six that Jimenez is works a lot better with Jimenez than it would Dax. So I just think it comes down to who you surround him with, as opposed to who's actually better at their job, because they're two totally different types of players in my head.
I'm trying to find something that I tweeted a while back. I'm trying to look through the way back Twitter, advanced search Twitter, because I know that I had a massive thread a while back about Gaston just absolutely ruining it for things.
Ruining the team or ruining the way things are set up?
It was basically, I'm going to just drop the link to the thread here. You can read through it, but I basically went frame for frame on a goal scored by Wando in the MLS's back tournament. It was the second goal scored by San Jose that game. It was like the 83rd minute or whatever. And Gaston basically just leaves Wando wide open. He was supposed to track back and cover Wando, and he didn't. So that's like, I understand some mental lapses, but that is a major mental lapse.
Mm-hmm. I would just like to reiterate that was his third game in MLS, for the record. So
yes,
that's not an excuse, but it's an excuse.
It's not an excuse because if you did your homework, you'd know that Wondolowski is the leading goal scorer of all time in MLS. And if he goes onto the pitch, you should probably pay attention to him. That's the thing with him. Like he looked better in his first game than he did in his next five.
He looked better in his first few games than he did in his last any games.
So it's the thing about him. I don't know, but I do know that he is Tam. He would have to be like, I don't know if I would want him as a DP or if I wouldn't want him as a DP, but he is a DP, so we just got to deal with it.
This dude's a DP on a bad team. He's a bad DP. You got Brian Nieto. Sorry, guys. Brian Nieto checking in. What's up? Hey, guys. Gaston is more finesse rather than hustle. I agree with Matt. The pairing of Gaston and Medrano were really complementary, and it's shown to work. And the more they work together, the better I think they'll get. Now, here's my... I slightly disagree with that. It worked to the tune of an 11th place team that missed the playoffs in an extended playoff format.
And I don't want to sugarcoat that any more than that, because they missed the playoffs after being given. They moved mountains for this team to make the playoffs.
Moved.
They moved mountains.
The Rockies were moved to the Midwest temporarily. They were here.
And the fact that we couldn't make the playoffs after. The goalposts had been moved so much. I almost thought we were the Patriots at some point. Like, mm-hmm. It's just the way that they were trying to shove the fire into the playoffs, and we just consistently said no. And so that's why something has to be wrong with this team. I still can't find it, but something has to be wrong with this team.
I don't think the root of the problems came from, you know, that Jimenez-Medrano pair. I truly believe that the root came from the attack in the midfield is fine.
Absolutely.
Everything else for me was the issue. And we can delve into that later, but I think if we're talking about specific reasons why we didn't make the playoffs, it's the wingers. And I will, you know, it's the wingers.
Oh, wait, do we get wingers. Into that? I we'll can't wait. We'll get there. I cannot.
That's my most passionate subject regarding this.
But I just want to say with Gaston, I think I kind of give him like the same sort of thought process as Sekulic, where it's, he did not do well as a defender. I can't really say much about him as a defender, but he did make great passes. He, you know, those, he ripped some, thinking he was Katai or something, but like, it's, he looked fine on the attack. He looked fine in possession of the ball. On defense, everybody kind of just fell apart. So
can
I don't know.
Something?
Mm-hmm.
What about if you move Gaston up to say like an eight, and you have Alvaro be a box to box guy, and then you bring Mauricio up to play that traditional six role? Because unlike Gaston, he is, you know, that's what he played in college. That's what he is. That's what he's good at.
You lose the 10.
And so although, yeah, I mean, you have a 10 in Luka Stojanovic, obviously Georgie's gone.
Well, where does he play? Where does Stojanovic play in that lineup if you're moving?
Well, Stojanovic in that lineup won't play, which I think is a good issue to have. And I can't say that Stojanovic is a starting caliber player because we've seen him play, what, one game?
Yeah, two, three, two. Yeah,
so that's one. Just a way that you could reconcile keeping Gaston as a DP while pushing him farther up the field and suit his strengths more adequately. But I still rate having a number 10. I think that's very important. So my opinion doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's fun to hear your guys' opinion, though. We all watch a lot of soccer and a lot of Chicago Fire soccer. And you know what? I think we have merit. We have merit in our opinions. It's not exactly Kruning-Dunning effect. Sometimes it is a Kruning-Dunner effect, whatever it is. God, I'm not saying it right. Dunning-Kruger effect that sometimes it infects MLS and they think that, you know, they're the smartest guys in the room. Oh, you know, not always. But everybody, if you could take a moment just to subscribe to Spitting Fire. Hopefully today's the day we earn your subscription. Oh, wow. It's been a long video already. And we're almost halfway there through the roster. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. Happy New Year to everybody. Smash that like button for Jiggly and Men in Red joining us. Let us know in the comments below if you have any disagreements or any agreements. We also got the live chat going here too. It's fun. So a lot of disagreement there on Gaston Jimenez. I was surprised. Fabian Herbers. I don't know how much disagreement we'll have here. He kind of was it what is what he was. Good.
Well, I mean, you only need to look at Men in Red's Twitter name to know his opinion.
Fabian was good.
Herbers is better than Messi.
Fabian was a great depth piece. He's a match day 18 type of guy he's better than Brant Bronico.
You want him on the bench.
You want him on the bench. I know some people have said Brant Bronico is a match day 18 guy. He's a match day 30 guy. Fabian Herbers is a match day 18 guy. I love Brant personally, absolutely. But Fabian Herbers is absolutely a match 18 guy in MLS. That guy also is a guy you could play on the wing, in the cam, in the center. You could put him at right back if you needed to, if you're running out of right back options. I'm just saying, this guy is a baller.
Fabian Herbers, I remember scouting him out for the draft, whenever that draft was. I just remember his name very well from that. And I remember he did okay with Philadelphia, and then they traded him to the Fire, and I was real excited about it. I think I was the only person excited about it.
Nope, I was a little, you got me a little excited.
In terms of all the people, like I remember seeing some people like, what's the point of getting him, whatever. I was excited about it. I said, like, he's an attacking player. You don't want him at striker. You don't want him, like, any further back. But, like, you know that line in Football Manager where it's AML, AMC, AM right? He can play in any position on that spot. No, nothing above, nothing below that. He can play in that line, and he will do okay. He will be, like, solid for you. That's why I think great person to have on the bench. I don't think he should be a starter. I don't think he's worth being a starter in MLS, but he can be a solid guy off the bench. And
I would agree with that.
The problem is that Paunovic started playing him at like central mid instead of like in that one line that he could play really well at. And then things just kind of went haywire. And then suddenly like he's playing in really weird positions and he's a striker now. And I think that he's fine when he is where he's supposed to be. When he is not, it's very annoying. And it's very annoying to consistently see him play when we have other players who are better. So it's just, yep. I'm not against him. And then there's also, you know, the argument, yeah, he scored 4 goals and he's got an assist. And my argument for that is, if you give somebody enough chances, they're going to score. If you put somebody in the right spot so many times.
What about Frankowski?
He's still got 3 goals and an assist.
He should have had 14. He should have had like 14 or 18.
If you put if you give somebody enough chances, they're gonna score like once or twice. Mm-hmm. If you let me stand in that spot enough times, I'm gonna score at least one goal. He's not a bad player. I don't not like him. I think he's fine. I think he's better to be coming off the bench, and we need to just get better players ahead of him.
I would agree. I don't really understand why Wiki loved Herbers as a starter. And granted, he produced a 4 goals. I think we're all at Soldier Field. He was Soldier Field, Messi, whatever. He was incredible at home for some incredibly weird reason. But yeah, like you guys have said, he is a depth piece. The fact that he could play pretty much any position in the attack, probably outside of striker, right center, 10, whatever, or right center, left, excuse me. Makes him very valuable, and he has, you know, a lot of MLS experience with the Union, which is something that this roster overall lacks. So I think if you have him, another winger, and a striker like a Fori or Frankowski on the bench, that's a pretty decent, you know, attacking depth right off the bench that you have compared to the rest of the league. It could be better, but for Herbers is going to be a guy that will get you a couple goals off the bench. Power, you know, a super sub almost. Be the guy who's going to have a high work ethic and get you, hopefully get you a goal.
Jiggly, real quick. Do you remember that winger we had for like in 2018, 2017, who came from Colorado, who quite a few of us said, not good enough.
Solignac.
He's
a dog.
Fabian Herbers is everything that some people were saying Solignac it was. Like for Fabian
Herbers, I actually really like that comparison.
Fabian Herbers is a legit MLS player. Solignac, he was a fraud in my opinion. Fabian Herbers was legit, and Fabian Herbers could play striker, could play winger, could play a lot of these spots. You could rely on Fabian Herbers in the same way you could not rely on Solignac. I was just thinking about that comparison. Brian Nieto saying, I like what Man in Red says, but who jumps it back? And Matt clarified, Taren and Calvo would be back there when you were talking about moving up Pineda to the midfield. Fair enough, Brian says, but that doesn't sound convincing enough, to be honest. I remember how much everyone knocked him during the MLS's back tournament, and he completely redeemed himself by the middle of the season. Also, Elliot Collier should have had 30 goals.
I was one of those
guys.
We'll
talk about Collier.
Yeah, during MLS's back was like, Fabian Herbers, cut him now. He's garbage. And he did bounce back, so... And now he's better than Messi in my eyes. So
I just want to say you said Soldier Field Messi, but the thing is did Fabian Herbers score a hat trick at Soldier Field? Because Messi did.
What?
For Argentina in the Copa America game, it was Copa game that I didn't go to. My dad took my sister to that game.
Yeah. Well,
he came on off the bench and scored a hat trick.
Now I got to change my title, Jiggly. Thank you.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that. I was away on vacation that whole Copa America. I wasn't watching at all.
I was very disappointed when Jamaica lost, but whatever. Yeah.
By the way, everybody in the live chat, thanks for joining us today. If you could take a moment to smash that like button. If everybody just took a moment to smash that like button, helps fan the flames, get to spread the word of Chicago Fire, and helps spread the word of Chicago Fire to everybody else. Gets these eyes going on here. Alvaro Medran, our next guy. Seven. Medran was one of the better players on the Fire. Seven on a bad team. It, to me, once again, seems a little generous. But 2 goals, 6 assists. Maybe a 6 for me, but definitely was one of the better players on the Fire. Diamond in the rough signing, especially the idea, I think that they...
The way that we got him.
Yeah, the way that he was brought about, got right as Pana was leaving, and Tyrus told us in his podcast way back when, check out that podcast, great show, that they actually wanted to get rid of him after that, too. They were ready to get rid of him because of that very reason.
I'll tell you why. At this point in time, I can tell you why.
Go ahead.
Alvaro failed his initial medical. He had an illness or disease that he failed to...
Be careful for HIPAA stuff when not.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know the specifics. I just know. He had something that he failed to disclose to the club. And the club found out, and they were trying to actively cut him. But for some reason, they didn't end up doing that.
Wow.
So I'm happy for that.
Weird signing.
Yeah.
It was really quiet, too.
I
I was very sus about Madron coming into the club because of the fact that he had been on, like, at that point, six different teams in like 7 different years or something ridiculous like that.
He's a Real Madrid, right?
Yeah, Reject. Real Madrid Academy product. Youth kid. And that brought a lot of questions in my head regarding work ethic and simply quality of play. But, you know, for me, I've been pleasantly surprised with what he's brought to the team. He's shown stints of being one of the top center mids in the league. You know, obviously that goal against the Houston Dynamo where he ran essentially the whole field was phenomenal. He's got very good technical abilities. He's not an incredible, you know, his defensive work rate is not ideal for a box-to-box type center mid guy. I would almost like to see him pushed up the field a little bit more so he wouldn't have all that responsibility of coming back. But I think he's definitely better players on the team. I definitely think he's a starter. And he pairs well with, you know, your DP6 right now. And I think that's very important to have that midfield connection that those two provide. And hopefully, you know, whoever's going to fill that third midfield spot, if there's, you know, three center mids, will have that same connection with Madron that Gaston does as well.
I remember because Madron was just randomly there at the Soldier Field announcement because I was there. My dad was invited as a original season ticket holder, but I went in his place instead. I skipped school that day. But Madron was just sort of there. And it was really weird. Like he hadn't signed yet, and I didn't know who this person was hanging out around Pauno. And then I saw some people, like, I think either saying it while I was there or after I'd left. It's like, oh yeah, that's Madron. That's this guy that they're signing, and looked him up and all that. And I mean, yeah, I agree with what Matt was saying with like the whole, like before he was signed, just, you know, is he going to be, he's a Real Madrid Academy reject. You know, that doesn't really paint a good picture. I remember the last time we signed a big name reject, which was Florent Cinema Pongole or Sinatra.
Wait Pogo a second. Stick. What about the Barcelona Academy kid that we had that we drafted and traded John to Toronto? Baccaro? John Baccaro.
Oh, no. That was he? He was. That's a different story.
Wasn't it like Baccaro his was a very different story. Barcelona
his,
or something?
Yeah, his like father that? His father was like a big name Barcelona player for a long time. And that's a whole different story that will take too long to get into, yeah. In my opinion, about Barcelona and the Fire treating Barcelona rejects. But it's just, I was hoping that he'd be like, okay. And he was, he showed up when he needed to show up. Finally in his entire career, he finally showed up and it looked like he was just playing to finally prove, yes, I can play.
Also,
no, sorry, go ahead, Jiggly, my bad.
And, you know, you guys were talking about, like, how he pairs up with Gimenez. Yeah, you got the 6, you got the 8, and now we just need to find the 10. I think that Madron would work best as an 8.
I'd agree.
And I think that we just need to get that 10.
Madron is also a guy who, he's very passionate, emotional. He also really appears to love this city. I think he could be a mainstay in this midfield for the next several years.
If he could...
I feel like he eventually will want to get back to Europe, you know, that kind of career rebound. Or that
if he could develop bounce. Like Valeri developed for Portland and become our captain, that would be great.
Yeah, no, he gets along well with the team. He's a team guy. I love him in that midfield, and I'm looking forward to see what he could do, you know, with a better team around him.
The article suggests that he holds onto the ball just a bit too long and sometimes too often. One too many touches, but you know, maybe that's just his technical quality. He wants to be on the ball.
Oh, absolutely. Guys with, you know, the quality of dribbling that Madron has often have that, you know, they keep the ball for a couple more seconds. That's just going to be something that he's going to need to figure out, because that's probably a reason why a bunch of clubs, you know, told them to leave after every year was...
I can give you the line at which it's wrong to hold on to the ball too long, and that's Katai. Just the guy... Katai. Everything... I am still very angry about how many people still liked Katai by the end of his time at the Fire. And now, you know, all the other stuff about him and, like, him having to get cut.
Yep.
But but that whole thing was bad in itself. But like on the pitch, Katai, I didn't like him. because he held on to the ball too much. I don't see that in Madron. Madron is fine. He's not a black hole.
No.
He is there to make sure to distribute the ball. He just has to think about it for a while. And I think that that just comes with being more comfortable. And I hope that he will be more comfortable next season. I hope everyone's going to be more comfortable next season in terms of just the entire world being more comfortable next season.
Hey, guys, I got to ask you a quick question. What say to this? We got 15 players left on this list, including some very, very, very tasty, spicy meatballs. What do you say to you? We take a 5-minute break and we make a part two. And we start that in about 5 minutes here.
Sure.
Or we could just continue blasting on and get through the rest of them. But I was thinking maybe a 5-minute break. I'll close the stream and we'll make a part two stream because this is a long stream at the moment.
I was fine to keep going, but
I'll do whatever.
All right. I'm glad you guys are both fine to keep going. Let's take a 5-minute break, everybody. I'm gonna close this down and we're gonna start a part two stream here. In about 5 minutes with about 15 players left and some of the most tasty, spiciest meatballs, including Shemek Frankowski, Nacho Aliceta, Georgie Mihailovic.
Why I think that Elliot Collier was the best player this entire season.
Elliot Collier. Oh, you got to keep that. Keep that. Keep that in the vest there, Jiggly, for the next one. But it's coming. We'll reveal.
Why? I think he is.
All will be revealed. All right. We're going to get into part two here in about 5 minutes. Thanks for everybody joining us after the fact. Thanks for everybody today already. Jiggly and Men in Red. Matt, thanks for joining us, guys. We'll catch you guys here in about 5 minutes. I'll talk with you guys. Keep, of course, talking with you guys. Everybody who's watching us live right now or after the fact, thank you so much for watching. Smash that like button. Consider subscribing to Spitting Fire YT. Hopefully today's the day we earn your subscription and we make our way up to 300 subscribers. All right, everybody. We will catch you guys later and have a great one. Happy New Year, everybody. Part two of Chicago Fire 2020 player ratings coming up right after this. Let's put some music on. Yeah.